Tony had waited all afternoon for Mira to return, his eyes fixed on the place she'd disappeared over the brow of the hill that morning, willing her to reappear there now, as the rain eased off into a drizzle and then into a mist, and the clouds lifted and the daylight faded into dusk and evening fell. And he knew he couldn't leave his hiding place among the pines until the dawn. It seemed an age since he'd eaten Mira's breakfast, an age since he'd gone back to the banana skin that he'd discarded, brushed it free of dirt and eaten that too. An age since he'd cut away a piece of bark from the pine tree under which he sat and placed it on his tongue to suck the resin, eyes closed, tasting turpentine, recalling that willow bark was an effective pain reliever, envisaging willows on the shores of Lake Kottawai. And then wondering if the vision that he'd conjured of those heavy-shouldered trees around the placid lake was a memory or a desire. His exhaustion was making him delirious. The night before, he had spent hours trying to remember whether he had told his mother yet about the Kottawai conspiracy. He'd felt sure that he had, until he played out the memory in his mind and realized that he himself was not present in any of the scenes that he remembered. He could see his mother on the telephone to him, and he could see her standing alone in the living room after she'd hung up. And he could see her a few days later receiving the news that Tony had been killed by accident in unsuspicious circumstances. And he could see her expression as she disbelieved it. And then as she decided to avenge him, her middle child, her oldest son. He settled down to try to sleep, focusing on the gnawing pain in his belly as a way of distracting himself from the pain in his ankle and the pain in his arm. His consciousness flickering and fluttering, the movement of the branches above him seeming to be whispering his name. Tony. 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 He jolted awake. It wasn't the branches. It was Mira, crunching through the shelter belt, feeling her way through the darkness, looking for him. In the moment that he saw her, she saw him. She hurried over, breathless, slipping one arm out of the backpack she was wearing and slinging it down to unbuckle the clasps. "I'm so sorry," she whispered, releasing the drawstring and reaching both her hands inside. "Shelley took the van. She went to fill it up like I was going to. And then she took fucking ages at the hardware store and Robert came, and I couldn't get away without it being obvious. Here, I brought you." She shoved the contents of her bag towards him. A first aid kit, a box of paracetamol, a bar of chocolate, a sandwich, an apple, a box of snack bars, a bag of nuts. "It's a fucking carnival down there," she said. "There are like 1,000 people on the property all of a sudden. I'm going to try to bring the van up here tomorrow, but obviously I'll need a reason. I thought I could maybe break something, like put a hole in the hose or something so it has to be repaired. Or like make it seem as though we've got a pest problem. I don't know, I'll think of something. But this is just to tide you over in the meantime. I'm so sorry it took me so long to get back." She was talking very fast, her features all but obscured in the dark. "Can you think of something?" she said. "Like, I even thought maybe I could pretend my mum was sick or something, so I have to leave in a hurry. But then I thought it can't be too much of an emergency, or Robert would offer to fly me out in his plane. I mean, maybe he'd do that, I don't know. Aren't you hungry?" Tony was staring at her in pure horror. "Mira," he whispered. "I told you, you can't travel at night." "No, it's okay," she said, reaching out a hand to reassure him. "It's okay, I don't have my phone. It's still inside the thermos, like you said. I left it in my tent. I didn't take it out all day, it's fine." "No," Tony said, still horror-struck. "No, I'm talking about the drones. If you move at night, they can see you better, because of the contrast. The heat of your body contrasts with the air. It makes you more visible, I told you that." "Oh," she said, seeming to deflate a little. "Yeah, shit. But we're probably okay, right? I mean, it's not like they're going to be watching everywhere at once. It's probably fine."
"Or it's not fine and we're fucking dead."
She drew back. "Hey, Tony, I'm actually risking quite a bit to help you here, you know, so—"
"Sorry," he said quickly, fighting down feelings of despair. "Thanks for the food, really, and the help. I'm just—"
"No, I know," she said. "I'm sorry.
I've just been so careful."
"I know," she said. "I know, I'm freaking out, you know?" He nodded.
"What do you mean there are like 1,000 people?"
"They're digging the foundations for the bunker," Mira said. "It's like a whole construction site, it's crazy."
"No," Tony said. "No, it's a front. It's a fucking front, I'm telling you."
"Robert said he bought the farm," Mira said. "He paid the balance like this week."
And then his guys came and they started working right away. Everything's happening, like right now.
You have to believe me, Tony said, clutching her. You have to.
I believe you, Mira said.
You do?
Yes. But Tony, listen. Tony heard a slither in the trees nearby, the synthetic sound of a jacket sliding past a branch. He shot out his hand to cover Mira's mouth, but it was too late. Now he heard footsteps too, patient footsteps coming straight towards them. And in the next moment, the darkness seemed to thicken and took on a shape that crouched down to peer under the branches of the tree where they were sheltering. A second later came a click, and then a blaze of yellow light so bright that Tony winced and snatched his hand off Mira's mouth to shield his face.
Well, hello, said a voice on the other end of the torch. You must be Tony.